This September marks the 15th anniversary of 9/11. It's hard to take in just how much our world has changed since then. But Rosa Brooks is here to help. She's a Georgetown University law professor and a senior fellow at the New America Foundation. Brooks grew up going to anti-war demonstrations, but later ended up working at the Pentagon. We spoke recently about her new book, How Everything Became War and the Military Became Everything. I started by asking her where she was on September 11th, 2001.
I was living in a very small town called Free Union, Virginia, which is about 10 miles outside of Charlottesville. And I was teaching at the University of Virginia Law School and was driving in to work on a little country road listening to NPR on the radio when I heard the first news of a plane flying into the World Trade Center.
And do you remember kind of how you understood the attacks, what you thought of the initial U.S. response?
You know, I remember getting into work, and within half an hour, the University of Virginia had canceled all classes, and people started just going home. No one quite knew what to do. But I ended up going out to lunch with a couple of colleagues and sort of looking at each other and saying, everything is going to be different now.
And less than a decade later, there you are working in the Pentagon, somewhere you never expected to be, as a senior advisor to Undersecretary of Defense Michelle Flournoy. The subtitle of your book is Tales from the Pentagon. And you open the book with this pretty powerful anecdote that's very post-9/11 about a briefing on an impending drone strike. Can you take us back to that moment, too, and how that affected you?
Yeah, and this was in, I think, late in 2010, and it was before U.S. drone strikes had become a big media issue at all. And they really weren't, I think, registering in a particularly big way, either in the public mind or in my own. And I found myself sitting in this room, one of those Pentagon classified conference rooms with no windows, and you feel like you're in an airlock deeply underwater or something. And we were being shown a set of slides about a young man, the suspected terrorist, and these are amazingly detailed. You know, we had his picture, we had his resume, we had details about his suspected terrorist strikes he'd been involved in, and everybody's kind of sitting there looking serious and looking grave, and the briefers were saying, well, we haven't been able to strike him because he's been in populated areas, but as soon as a window of opportunity opens up, as soon as he's no longer near other people, we're going to strike using an unmanned aerial vehicle to minimize risk to our people. And I sort of sat there thinking, you know, you know, it felt very routine. It's all very bureaucratic. It didn't feel different from any other meeting. And a couple of days later, I was eating dinner with my children, who were, I think, maybe 4 and 7 at the time, eating spaghetti and meatballs. And my cell phone rang, and I picked it up, and it was one of my colleagues. And he had been at that meeting with me, and he said, hey, you know that window of opportunity we were talking about? It just opened up. And I knew immediately what he meant, that the strike that had been planned had actually occurred, and this guy whose picture I'd been looking at and whose resume I'd been looking at was now dead. And I said, okay, thanks for letting me know. We'll talk tomorrow. We obviously couldn't talk any more about it on the phone. And I still didn't think that much of it. You know, I went back to having dinner with my kids, and then that night I had a terrible nightmare, I still scares me to think of it. It was just this awful nightmare of someone I loved murdered and body parts all over. And I kind of woke up shaking, and it, you know, it sort of hit me only then. Whoa, you know, on some level, I should have known this already. But you go to work at the Pentagon, and whether even if you're not the one who pulls any triggers ever or gives any orders, you know, you're part of a vast bureaucratic enterprise that kills people, that reaches down out of the sky and kills people thousands of miles away.
Wow. It makes me think of the stories we have heard a lot since then of drone operators actually being in their regular lives in the U.S., but going to work and working on these drone strikes and the sort of dissonance of that, of kind of regular life and a battlefield far away.
Yeah.
And all of that is part of what the book is really about, right? That in some way, there's the moral issues that were snagging your mind, as it were, but also your realization of how war has changed.
That's right. And the issues that are raised are really unfamiliar to us. And, you know, when I think about things like drone strikes, targeted killing seems a little chilling. I sometimes say to my friends who are critical, well, would you prefer untargeted killings? Because that's what the United States and the Allies did during World War II. For instance, we, you know, carpet bombed entire cities. That's not better, obviously, than a strike which is able to single out a single individual rather than indiscriminately killing thousands upon thousands of people. But at the same time, it does start blurring the boundaries of what we think of war, because we think of war as you're killing the enemy not because you know anything about him as an individual. You're killing him just because he's the enemy, period. Whereas with the technologies that we now have today, the combination of precision targeting technologies and intelligence and surveillance technologies, we really are targeting specified individuals. And it starts, morally speaking, it feels very uncomfortable because it starts feeling a whole lot more like assassinations and a whole lot more like murder.
Would you say that after years of criticism and some changes, particularly by the Obama administration, that the protections have gotten better? In other words, is the U.S. using drone strikes in a more responsible, ethical, legal way?
Yes and no. I think that when the Obama administration says they work very, very hard to minimize or ideally prevent altogether civilian casualties, that is absolutely true. But what I think is still extremely troubling and really I think is inexcusable is the level of secrecy and the lack of any non-executive branch, meaningful non-executive branch oversight. We still have a situation where, in essence, the U.S. is saying we can kill any person anywhere on earth at any time based on evidence that we will not share with anybody else. It will be a secret, and we will never even acknowledge who we killed. I find that shocking.
You know, we started out talking about 9/11, and you write that you were pregnant that day driving to work when you first heard. I was pregnant as well at that time, and I think of that crop of kids as 9/11 babies. They've sort of grown up and been incubated in this new atmosphere. Do you feel like you can put your finger on what's different for them because of this endless war footing that we find ourselves in?
Yeah, you know, they in some ways take for granted a world that those of us old enough to be working in government, to be senior journalists and so on, I think still struggle with. You know, they take for granted a world in which the dividing line between war and peace is fuzzy.
Yeah, that's really interesting and sobering. Rosa Brooks is the author of the new book, How Everything Became War and the Military Became Everything. She's a law professor at Georgetown and a senior fellow at the New America Foundation. Thank you for talking to us about all this.
Thank you.